I'm Tass Mellis of The Starters.
This is Ben Golver with the Open Floor Podcast.
Hi, I'm Kristen Ludlow from NBA Inside Stuff.
I'm OG Anunoby of the Toronto Raptors.
Hey, I'm Elena Deladon, and welcome to the Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Double Clutch Podcast. I'm one of your usual hosts, Mike Miller. Tonight, I am joined by 9 wins straight Nick Whitfield.
Feels good.
How you doing?
Feels good. I'm reveling in the most prestigious New York franchise, obviously going on a 9-game win streak.
And as you can see, the battle for the boroughs have already begun. Joining us as a special guest, the founder of UK Nets Fans, 1/3 of the BK to UK pod, the face of NBA UK Mastermind, it's Mr. Matt Hardy. How you doing, buddy?
Really good. Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm going to try not to bite about the Knicks versus Nets stuff, but I'll give it 5 minutes and I think we'll be good to go.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this for a few days now, about how this could go. But it's a good job we're recording remotely. So any chairs thrown won't actually hit intended targets. It's always good. Any children crying at the picture of the other ones, you know, celebrating on the wall. What was that, Julius Randle's son? Daddy, I hate them.
Do you know what, though? It was actually like immediately following that that the Knicks went on this run. So,
They harnessed the power of a child's tears.
It's a good run, but we saved our impressive historic win streak for a West Coast road trip. But, you know, we'll get into it, I'm sure.
We'll get into that. Thank you to everyone who is watching us live over on Twitch or listening to us back on audio form. If you're not already following us, make sure you check us out at Double Clutch UK on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and now TikTok, thanks to Kirk. Thanks to Kirk, as always, for just being an absolute magician in the back of his bus, making this whole thing run. Join us on Discord to chat hoops all the time. Discord.me/DoubleClutchUK. Watch us live on Twitch every Monday at 9 p.m. British time. I think it's 4 p.m. New York time at the minute and 1 p.m. Pacific time. Let's just call it that. Twitch.tv/DoubleClutchUK. Thank you very much for listening. We've got lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of things to get through and only an hour to do it in. So let's jump around the association immediately. So just some headlines from around the week, several of them. So the week started off, Curry and Jokic both went absolutely ham in their Monday night games. And for some reason, the next day, all we were talking about was Vivian. CP3 passed Magic Johnson for 5th all-time on the assist leaderboard, which is just an incredible feat, and we'll touch on that shortly. Damian Lillard passed Jason Kidd for 10th all-time on the three-pointers list. He's now 146 behind Paul Pierce, and he should finish this season about 100 shy of the former Boston Celtics / Instagram Live star. And by next season, at the pace he's on, which is about 270 a season, he should jump all the way up to 6th, which is quite incredible, really, if you look at the top 15 of NBA players in the all-time threes. You've got 1, 2, 3 guys who are active already in the top 10, and it's only going to get more active guys in there as the amount of threes just goes up and up and up. The Indiana Pacers' Jakar Sampson was suspended for a game for headbutting Patty Mills, and no one noticed. Not sure if that's because it was the Pacers and the Spurs, or just because it's kind of hard to headbutt someone when you're 6 inches taller than them. Joel Embiid missed a full-court buzzer beater, which would have just been an incredible end to a game. Trae Young sprained his ankle, which has caused distress in the Hawks' playoff push. James Harden is out indefinitely after tweaking his hamstring in warm-ups. Jaren Jackson Jr. is back for the Memphis Grizzlies. He's a huge addition for their playoff push. Sadly, Terrence Clark, a 19-year-old NBA draft prospect and former Kentucky Wildcat, passed away in a car accident on Thursday, a day after signing with Clutch Sports. The 6'7 guard was projected to be a late first-round pick, and our thoughts go out to his family and friends. On the 21st of April, the NBA announced that 3 players had returned positive COVID tests this week, and that's something that could have a real impact as we creep ever closer towards the playoffs. We're 3 weeks away from the play-in now. Russell Westbrook continues to drop triple-doubles like they're just, you know, just too easy. Draymond Green had tied his career high with 19 assists. The Knicks have won 9 straight, as we already said. They're on their longest winning streak since a 13-game run in 2012-13. The Wizards have won 8 straight. Last time they did that, Michael Jordan was on the team. The Clippers are 9-1 over their last 10. Anthony Davis is back. and LeBron's not far behind. Steph Curry's dropped 85 threes this month in 12 games. It could have been 13 games, but he didn't play versus the Raptor. He's still got Dallas to play on Tuesday, Minnesota on Thursday. Side note, that's 15 games in 29 days. This schedule is beyond ridiculous. DeMarcus Cousins has signed with the Clippers for the rest of the season. Brook Lopez has received a warning for flopping. And your players of the week, Luka Doncic in the West with 26 points, 10 assists, 9 rebounds, and a 3-0 record for the Mavs. And in the East, you've got Bradley Beal with 31.3 points, 5.8 rebounds, 55% from three, and 4 wins for the Wizards. So, guys, I've just verbal diarrhea'd all over last week. Matt, what was your favourite moment of the week?
So I'm going to give a little bit of forewarning that some of my highlights may or may not be centered around the Brooklyn Nets, because that's who I spend the majority of my time sort of all up in their business with. But I've gone for the return of Kevin Durant this week. I've called him, I wish I knew more about cars, because I think I could make a very, very clever pun about him being rust proof. But KD coming back from another layoff against Phoenix and averaging more points than minutes. He had 33 points in 28 minutes against Phoenix, going 12 of 21, 57% from the field, 2 of 3 from free. He also did some bits, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, a block, 2 steals. Not bad for a guy that is somewhat struggling to get back on the court.
Yeah, I actually can't believe I missed him off my list of things that have happened this week. So that's a huge bit of welcome news for the Nets and their push to retain the number one seed and to go into the playoffs with that. Incredible coming off the bench just like that and back into a rhythm, ready to go. Nick, your moment of the week.
So I have a sort of macro and a micro moment. So I have the Knicks beating the Raptors for the 9th win in a row. Balance out that Brooklyn nonsense we've just been talking about. even within that game, my favourite moment was there was one defensive possession where Derrick Rose, who's been absolutely astonishingly good, actually, since we signed him, him and Reggie Bullock pressuring the ball on a pick and roll. The Raptors move it. They finally get a roll to the rim and Nerlens Noel comes over and blocks the shot. It was really kind of evocative of what's been behind this Knicks run, which, all jokes aside, has been a surprise to everyone, I think, how Tibbs has been able to turn this team around. As you mentioned, you stole something I was going to mention, longest game since win streak since 2012-13 season. A couple of other things about the Knicks just before we go off that topic. I think the improvement of RJ Barrett's been overlooked a little bit this season, just because the guy who may well end up winning most improved is also on his team. But yeah, RJ Barrett really, really come along this season, worked on his shot a lot. And one interesting fact, and I was giving a little clue with Jason Kidd's high school jersey here. So the last time the Brooklyn Nets were 20 games over 500, Jason Kidd was their point guard. And the last time the Knicks won 9 straight, Jason Kidd was also their point guard. So, good week for Jason Kidd fans.
Yeah, incredible stat. Incredible run, to be honest. That 12-13 team weren't half the guys 35 or older.
Yeah, I think Kenyon Martin was on there. We may have even had Rasheed Wallace.
Tyson Chandler?
I think so, yeah. Obviously,
Melo. Who's been 35 for about 20
Jason
years.
Jason Kidd. It was a weird roster.
Pablo Prigioni.
Yes, of course.
This is the father time, yeah. Knicks.
I was never super confident around that team. They were like, they were overachieving almost on the back of like the veteran presences. So I never thought that team was going anywhere. But yeah, fun to watch anyway.
Ultimately they didn't. So you were right. my favourite moment was summed up in about 3 seconds. It was Embiid's missed shot, because for me that just encapsulated that you can do everything to stay in an NBA game for 47 minutes and 55 seconds, but it could all end like that on a single shot. And that's part of the beauty of the game I love, because we talk so much about sort of the chess match that goes on between coaches in 7-game series, but ultimately it can come down to just someone heaving a ball 90 feet through the air. Let's jump into a couple bits a bit deeper. Chris Paul passing Magic Johnson on the all-time assist leaderboard for number five is just a huge achievement. I get the impression, though, that while there's now a bit of love towards him because people are finally realizing that he makes every team he plays for better, but I get the impression that people kind of don't appreciate how good he is and haven't done. And just, you know, he's the guy who, I mean, we make the jokes on the podcast all the time. We did it during the bubble about he's the guy who's calling the snitch line, everything like that. Do you think that Chris Paul is underappreciated as a talent? Nick, I'll come to you first.
Yeah, I'm a huge Chris Paul fan. And as someone who is pretty much the same size and age as Chris Paul, more or less, I find what he can do on a basketball court absolutely astonishing. Just his control of the game, his vision, not quite the scorer necessarily he once was, but like one of the best mid-range shooters we've ever seen in the NBA, really developed his three-point shot even more as he as his career went on. We've seen him play in different systems now. He was happy to play second fiddle to James Harden in Houston. We've seen him be an absolute kind of leader, putting kids on his back and leading the Thunder to a surprise season. And now we're seeing, again, he's able to just go to another team and lead them into what looks like contention at this point. So I think he's also been quite unlucky. He, in a lot of big games and playoff series, he's managed to get injured, which I think there's a kind of stigma that follows Chris Paul in terms of, can he really do it in the playoffs? I think slightly unfairly. He also got a bit of a reputation as a moaner as a Clipper, which I don't think anyone likes moaning. So
to the tunnels.
Yeah. But yeah, in short, I think, yeah, totally. I think the other thing, and I'm coming full circle here. So I was looking at how many assists Chris Paul averages a season. Having just overtaken Magic Johnson, there's now Mark Jackson and Steve Nash about just over 200 assists ahead of him. Chris Paul averages around 500-ish a season, depending on how many games he plays. So almost certainly will finish third. Can you guess who that's behind?
I've already got the list in front of me.
It's so Jason Kidd, just to bring everything back. The whole world revolves around Jason Kidd is what I'm quickly learning. He'd have to play another 3.5 seasons to even have a chance at the same ability he is now to have a chance of catching Kidd. So he's probably finishing third all time.
Which kind of makes it scary how many assists John Stockton got sitting there way ahead at 15,806. Matt, the Nets obviously played the Suns last night. What was it like, sort of, watching your team go against this Suns team led by Chris Paul? Obviously, the Nets were down for a lot of the game. You know, was there a squeaky bum time at all during that game?
Well, it's always a little bit. You can never write the Chris Paul and the Suns off, because I know this is the second time we've played them this season. I think we won the first one, but Chris Paul absolutely came alive in that fourth quarter of the previous game. So, you know, I think with that kind of veteran experience and all that savvy he's got, you can never really think you can think you're safe and think you're home free, but you can never really count them off. But I was going back and looking at his all-time assists, and I think I've done the maths right, but it's been a long weekend. But he's got 10,145, and Steve Nash, Nets head coach, has got 10,335. So I think with Chris Paul averaging something like 8.9 assists a game, he's going to top that in the next 21 games, which, you know, with, I don't know if that has got the right, probably not by the look on your face, but
I'm not great at maths. So it all confuses me. I need it written down in front of me, but he's way off that, isn't he? I don't know. Maybe. No, you might be right. You might be right. If you get, yeah, okay. No, you're right. You're right. I'll take that. I'll ease back. See, I told you, I'm crap at maths.
I think, yeah, he is massively underrated. Going back to Jason Kidd, obviously being a Jason Kidd fan, I do have a soft spot for these kind of pass first facilitator point guards. But I don't know if you guys saw the StatMuse post that went out about Chris Paul and his winning percentage after he goes to a new team, but it's happened everywhere he's been. So before Chris Paul, the Hornets were at 22% record. After Chris Paul arrived, it went up to 46%. Clippers before CP was 39%. After Chris Paul went to 60%. Happened again at the Rockets, happened again at the Thunder, and obviously happened again at the Suns. And they're going to hit the playoffs for the first time in 11 years. So, yeah, he's pretty undeniable.
Yeah. I think the and this is weird because I saw a very similar stat around Jason Kidd earlier today about how he basically just made every team he ever went to incredibly better. But I put Chris Paul in that bracket with the best past first point guards I've kind of ever seen play in terms of it's him, Kidd, Nash, Stockton. Yeah, I think those are my kind of top in terms of people I've seen play.
Yeah, he's right up there. Do you know what? A couple of years ago, I did a live show, a non-BC thing, and one of the analysts on it was really venomously going at Chris Paul because he was a, quote, loser. And I was just absolutely baffled by it. I was like, yeah, okay, so he's not won. You know, we can have a laugh that he's not gone. He had, at that point, gone X far in a playoff series, blah, 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 blah. But like, this is one of the top 500 people in the world at their profession. At that point, he was probably top 10 in the league and probably top 5 in his position. It's just, how can you call him a loser? It's just a really bizarre rhetoric.
You know, the other thing I really like about Chris Paul is... and it doesn't get talked about as much as his offense, but his defense is so aggressive and he takes matchups personally. So when the Warriors were on their big run, you'd watch a game where Chris Paul went in and he's got a really interesting mix of physicality, aggression, and like super high IQ, obviously. So I always like watching him defend the other top point guards in the league because it's always something interesting to watch.
Mm. Yeah, something scary about that top 10 assists is that LeBron is at number 8. So there's only two active guys on that list, which is LeBron and Chris Paul. Everyone else who's retired is in the Hall of Fame except one person, Mark Jackson, who's 4th on the list. Does Mark Jackson deserve to be in the Hall of Fame?
Based on the fact everyone makes the Hall of Fame, yes.
Based on the fact he's got 10,000 assists.
Yeah. He's a very distinctive style of play as well. For anyone who didn't watch him, he was kind of, he had an incredible post game.
Guard.
Yeah. And even like at the 3-point line to set up plays, he would start posting up the other guard to initiate an offense. It was really strange to watch even at the time. But yeah, really unique player.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on. In some local news, the NBA are opening a store in London. This came out last week. Someone from the NBA UK office tweeted a picture. I think it just said London and had like a pin drop. And it was a picture of, in fact, we've just thrown it up on the screen there. Cheers, Kirk. It's a double-fronted shop, basically, orange shop, NBA London. Sent the UK community into just a frenzy. Certainly inside the Double Clutch Slack chat, we were trying to figure out, we can break some news here. Where is it? And we were frantically searching Google Maps and trying to figure out. And to be fair, we got really, really close. We got onto the main street. We just didn't get onto the side street. And it wouldn't have shown us it anyway because it still had the old building there. But an NBA store in London opening this summer. Matt, what does that mean for you and the British basketball community?
Obviously, it's great for optics and the NBA having a presence here, like a physical presence here in the UK, means that they see and appreciate the love from this side of the pond, which is always good. I think on a previous episode, you discussed how the UK ranked in terms of overall market share for jersey sales in Europe. So that speaks to having a store here. It's obviously really, really cool. I think weirdly off the back of the pandemic and things like that, I think people are going to want to have these kind of experiences a bit more and want to actually go along and support these kind of bricks and mortar stores and, you know, just cherish a bit of freedom a bit more than maybe they did pre-corona. But what I think would really, really tip it over the edge would be jersey printing. And this takes me back to, we had like a Sports Direct in Swindon or a JJB or something back in the day that used to do all the screen printing and stuff like that for your football shirts and stuff. And it seems to have gone out of fashion. But jersey printing, I think, would be really cool. Otherwise, you know, it'll be a, it'll be pumping out Lakers and Bulls jerseys to casual fans, which is also great. But I think it's a market that's somewhat saturated in this day and age of, you know, buying online. So if I'm traveling all the way to London, I want it to be an experience. You know, if I want to buy a Nick Claxton jersey, I want to be able to get it from the.
Okay.
I was expecting Bruce Brown to be your go-to there.
I was expecting like his own one, like Hardy and whatever his favorite number is.
But no, I think actually, just for the record, I do have a Whitfield Knicks jersey printed at Madison Square Garden.
Exactly.
It does there exist. You go.
I'm sure they do it at the one in New York as well. They do the printing there. We had a question in the chat. Where is it in London? It's going to be 14 to 16 Fulbert's Place, Carnaby, Soho, W1F, 7PH. So, yeah, we'll let you know as soon as it comes out, when it's opening, as soon as we know. I'm in two minds as to whether it's good and whether it will work, like, because we had a Mitchell & Ness store for roughly 4 years, and maybe it's because Mitchell & Ness, certainly over here, are a much smaller and lesser known brand. But that only lasted 4 years. It wasn't in as good a place as Carnaby. It was in Derby Street, I want to say, or D'RB, or what, and it was really, really small. But nonetheless, was like an absolute treasure trove for an NBA fan. Nick, do you have any concerns that with our propensity to buy things online now, this might not be what we want it to be? Obviously, in London, it's a tourist attraction, but
yeah, I think physical retail has to change anyway. We're too conditioned to buy online, and physical retail, and I'm sure the NBA is being the kind of forward-thinking organization that is on top of this trend, but like physical retail has to get way more experiential. That's what people look for now. They have to have a reason to go to a physical store, unless it's right next to you. So like I live in Surrey, for example. I'll go along if I'm in London and I'm in the area already, but it would seem a bit silly for me to go all the way up there, pay for the train up there, which is stupidly expensive, obviously, now, and just to buy the same jersey I could probably buy cheaper on the internet. So there has to be something more to the experience of going there than just buying the same jersey you get online, be it when they have players in town doing autograph signings or those are the sorts of things that will really drive people there, on top of the obviously tourists once our industry is back up and running, thankfully, hopefully soon.
So you're looking for unique activations at this. And I guess that builds into what Matt's saying about it being an experience to go there. Like the one in New York obviously has ton, I think it's like four floors. Mm. And it has things like basketballs with players' handprints on them, so you can go and stand and put your hand on it. It'd be cool if they had you know, a hoop in there or something. I know there's one outside, there's a Pro Direct store around the corner that did have a hoop outside it, but you can't really play there. But I don't know how much room these shops have.
You're
teaching to be honest.
Me here. I had no idea Pro Direct had a physical store.
Yeah, Pro Direct's flagship store is just around the corner. And that's another thing, like NBA fans don't realise it's there, and that has all kinds of kicks and has a selection of jerseys as well. Obviously not the sort of range we get here, but we were sort of talking in Discord earlier, and I think it was Ross had mentioned the store that was down by you in the 90s, Slam Dunk. I always thought it was called Hoop Stuff, so maybe I'm thinking of a different store, but I kind of like had bubble writing. Was that the logo? It was like sort of bubbly. Yeah, it's just me getting old. And that was always great to have, but obviously that didn't stand the test of time, but that was in a pre-online era. Then we had, obviously, our friend Sammy the Bench Warmer had a shop in Camden. Obviously, this isn't a NBA product. It's the resale sort of market. That, unfortunately, didn't work out the way he wanted to. There's obviously online small businesses that are doing well, like Hooping and Looting and the Throwback Store. I just wonder whether there's a need for it. It has to offer something distinct because you've got all these online retailers. We saw Hardwood Ventures in Newcastle struggle to have a physical store. And then, like I say, there's Pro Direct and there's the Nike store in Oxford Street, which can do a large amount of this and beyond basketball. So they really do need to offer something unique. But I'm hopeful they will, because these guys aren't stupid. And if they're putting money into a store in a central London location, they've got to have a plan around it.
Yeah. I don't think the success or failure of that store will be judged by sales necessarily. I think it's more of a brand and prestige thing than anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's not there to make money. It's just to prove that the NBA is a global brand and all that kind of stuff. And if they can put on some cool events a couple of times a year and mm-hmm. you know, have the odd superstar there and turn it into a bit of what was it called? Like the Hollywood Cafe or whatever it is that they have all around the world that's got like weird movie.
Hard Rock Cafe,
that's it.
Yeah, so they've got an NBA cafe in Madrid, actually.
Awesome. So, props and stuff all up on the wall that you can go.
Yeah.
Like you say, with the handprints and the balls, and just make it something worth going to.
Yeah, so they need an espresso machine basically in there as well. We're giving all this free business advice to them about what they need to do. We really ought to be on the payroll. I am keen to see it. I am. Part of me is gutted that my job has become more remote because of the pandemic, because that wouldn't have been far for me to get to commuting every day to work. But someone's just said, Hooping and Looting, shout out Hooping and Looting in the chat. Oxford Street Sports Direct has an NBA range, but it's closed now. Right, okay, I'm not quite sure what he's getting at there, but knowing Elliot, it's probably something that's beyond me anyway. Let's move on. Let's get in the zone and talk nothing but Nets for at least a few minutes. Now, normally we do a Q&A when we have a guest on, but we didn't do it at the start because we thought, you know, let's mess things up a bit. So we're going to do a Q&A now. So Matt, welcome to the show. Obviously, everyone has had a chance to meet you now. We've never sort of spoken verbally before, other than, you know, you've asked me questions before on a show and that's about it. But we've interacted a lot. So I thought, you know, what I'd do is I'd listen to your show you did last night, your live stream, which was great, by the way, the BKT UK on Twitch, just to see if I could glean more of your personality and get a better understanding of you. And I learned some key things about you. Firstly, I learned you went to secondary school. Second, I learned you got dead legs at secondary school. And thirdly, I learned that you may or may not have had a pair of Crocs.
That's a vicious rumor that's doing the rounds. I've never owned a pair of Crocs. I just, you know, I know of them. I've no worn them, and I don't want that to start circulating on the internet.
Okay, so that's been denied. So how did you get into hoops? What is it that got you into basketball?
It was a mixture of things, really. So I kind of had some cool older cousins. And, you know, sort of when you get dragged around here, aunties or uncles' houses, you kind of just get told to go off and play and that kind of stuff. And they were massive hoops fans. So they had, you know, posters of Kobe and Michael Jordan up in their room. So me being an impressionable little kid, I was just like, yeah, cool. I like basketball too now. So, you know, I got a ball. There was a hoop screwed to the back of my house and I had a big old patio so I could kind of play a bit of hoops and annoy my parents and neighbors. I also got NBA courtside on the N64, I think it was like NBA Jam 2000 or something like that, which I was always on. And I remember I'm not sure what the licensing issue was on one of those games, but the Chicago Bulls had number 23 was called roster player. So they obviously just couldn't get his likeness, couldn't use his name or something like that. So that was a bit weird and it stuck with me. But yeah, just through gaming, really. I remember playing NBA Live 2003, which is another Jason Kidd reference because he was on the cover there. And yeah, played it at school a little bit. And then I kind of sort of went out of touch of it. And then I had a colleague join me at work who bang into it. And he kind of reignited my passion for basketball again. And after a while, I was like, okay, cool. I'm back and I'm watching. I need a team to follow. Always makes it a bit more fun. And the New Jersey Nets had just moved to Brooklyn. They had a shiny new arena. There was a lot of hype. Jay-Z was a part owner, which, you know, was appealed to me as a hip hop fan growing up. And I was like, okay, this is me. I'm a Nets fan. You know, win or lose, and that was it.
That's pretty cool, Nick. Did you want to jump in?
Yeah, so we were just talking before the show, and you're from Swindon. Did you, when you were getting into basketball, did you have the issue of, and I think The reason I ask is because at my grand old age of 36, when I was getting into basketball, it was pre-internet when I was getting into it, which ages me a lot. But what it meant was that...
I think giving your age out aged you a lot, yeah, actually. Yeah.
But what was the issue was like pre-internet, where like now, thanks to organizations like you who run a fan site and platform, Double Clutch and all the other great communities out there, it's quite easy to find other people interested in the game online. Is that something... Were your friends into it growing up, or was it something you got into on your own? Or
so it was. I was definitely the same as you. I grew up pre-internet, but it kind of came into my house in my kind of formative years, and just kind of really they crossed paths while my internet came into my house just as I was getting into basketball. So I was watching And One mixtapes. I was watching slam dunk contests and things like that. Never really the games. I didn't really know what I was looking for. But that definitely helped. I was definitely trying all like the spider dribble moves like in between my legs and my patio as I was dodging dog poo. But I did have a couple of friends. Like, you know, I played for my school team. We, you know, played a couple of like other schools throughout the year and stuff. But it was genuinely that school team, although we three-peated in those local Swindon schools, whatever. We didn't have positions because our PE teacher didn't know the positions. And our entire playbook was give it to Chris, because my friend Chris was 6'4" at 14 and played for the county or something like that. So he was just going off and doing whatever he needed to do. And we all just rode his coattails. It was quite nice. And I was just happy playing on my own, I think. But looking back on it and, you know, being 30 in my 30s as well, I think if I had my time again, I'd probably try to play a bit more extracurricularly. But yeah, like you say, it's just hard to make those connections back in the day.
And who's your first ever favorite Nets player?
First ever favorite Nets player, probably Joe Johnson. Just ISO Joe. I think even still is one of the most clutch players in league history. And obviously kind of sent me down a bit of a rabbit hole of like seeing his whole career and his time before he got to the Nets. But he had me when he absolutely put Paul Pierce on skates playing against Boston, and he sort of did a low dribble and Paul Pierce's head just stopped working and he fell over. And that was just like, cool, that's me. Joey Jesus is the guy. Followed closely by Brook Lopez, who I think is a bit of a net sort of, there will always be fondness for Brook Lopez in Brooklyn.
And being that this is quickly becoming the Jason Kidd podcast, how, when you kind of were really becoming a sort of hardcore Nets fan, did you, like, how much time did you spend going back and looking at that finals run that team had?
Not a great deal. I should sit down and really, really look at it, but no, I've not really gone back. I've just been trying to kind of consume as much current stuff as I can. And, you know, the great thing about basketball is there's so much basketball to enjoy, but it's also pretty rough. And I remember trying to go back in time to do a bit of a deeper dive back when I used to write articles for UKNetsFans.com. I wanted to get and have a real deep look at the history of the Nets. And I think I got up to about just when the ABA closed down. And I kind of, I ran out of steam, but yeah, it's nice to know that the Nets are still the reigning ABA champs, which is, you know, nice little touch to have.
Yeah.
So what's the transition been like then, going from a team that were, well, they were terrible, quite frankly, just completely ripped of assets, left with aging, decrepit superstars they could never get the return they wanted on for, to now being basically the talk of the NBA on every single show that's going on. What's that transition been like as a fan to watch?
It's really strange. Like, so the main thing is like all the outside attention, which I'm not used, like not outside attention for me whatsoever, outside attention for the Nets, obviously. But just having everyone have an opinion on your team, which is weird, because like I've been through the 21 win seasons where no one cared about the Nets whatsoever. So everyone seemingly having an opinion about absolutely everything. And yeah, we've increasingly become the villains of the NBA, which I kind of I'm resisting, but you know, I get the odd day where I'm like, it does kind of get to me, and I'll do a snarky reply to someone. My mentions have never been busier than with other people randomly getting and voicing their opinions. But no, it's really cool, and I'm just super grateful for absolutely everything. And that's why it winds me up when Nets fans are like, you know, it's championship or bust. Anything less than a championship, maybe two championships in the next 2 years, is an absolute write-off, and you know, this team should be embarrassed if that doesn't happen. I'm like, I'm just having a good time, lads. We're winning basketball games. We've got Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and James Harden all balling out. Like, I'm just happy. So yeah, the running joke on BKT UK pod is something that Aiden came up with, and I think it's a joke from The Office, where it's, you know, when you look back at the good old days and you wish you could have known you were in the good old days back then. We're in the good old days. And this is something that we're going to kind of look back on and go, God, do you remember when, you know, we had three Hall of Famers playing in their prime in the same team? And, you know, it's what's not to love.
I do have to say, as a marketer by profession, when the Nets first moved to Brooklyn and they first unveiled the branding, I was so wowed by it and quite jealous, because I think the Nets branding is probably my favorite in the NBA. It's kind of cool now that they actually have a team to go with the cool branding.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that was a conscious decision from the Nets people. They want anything flashy. They just wanted local buy-in, basically, from people in the city of Brooklyn to, like, who wouldn't wear just a plain black with Brooklyn written on it if you're from Brooklyn? What's not to like? So yeah, it's really cool that's sort of, now we can come and do the throwbacks. Now we've got a good team. We can harken back to the team sort of, I know it's like the 20th anniversary of that classic jersey, but the 30th, sorry. But as you say, it's nice that we got a cool team to fill it. But I remember it was Louis Scola who played for the Nets back in the day after the move to Brooklyn, said that once they start winning, everyone's going to want to come here just because of, including the arena, the front office, the whole organization, top to bottom, they're just run incredibly well. And it looks really slick. So then he was just like, look, as soon as this team actually starts having seen success on the court, which they were always going to do, I think, that's when, you know, you're going to see superstars like Kyrie and KD choose the right side of New York, you know?
One of the most interesting players for me on the Brooklyn roster is Mike James, who they just signed. And he has been one of the best players in Europe for quite a long period now, along the lines of, and how I kind of put it for anyone who doesn't watch European basketball, people who've been kind of on his level are like Nikola Mirotic, say, a kind of EuroLeague MVP sort of level. And if the Nets had signed Mirotic on top of the players they already have, people would be going crazy. Yet they've signed Mike James, and there hasn't been a huge amount of fanfare, probably just because a lot of people aren't familiar with him. What have you made of him in his first few games?
So obviously is super small sample size. And I'll be honest, I don't watch European basketball. I didn't really know about him, but I knew he had some NBA experience back in 2018. I hadn't heard of him, and actually Steve Nash had never met the bloke until he suited up, which I think in the modern NBA is astounding how that happens. But from what I've seen, he's been a great second unit guard, which we've needed. I think with Harden being out indefinitely, hopefully coming back for the playoffs, Tyler Johnson being out, Chris Chioza missing time. Obviously, he's not going to be coming back for the rest of the season. Spencer Dinwiddie being out for the entire season. No matter what he says, I don't think he's coming back for the playoffs. And from what I saw, especially in that last game, he plays with his head up. There's a few times he ran into traffic, but he made the right play, found the open man. He can shoot the three, and he's got a tasty little like baby hook in the locker too, which I found, which, you know, you don't really see that much, especially from guards. But I think he's going to join that list of Nets players on the opposing team's scouting report that they just don't account for, and that will absolutely burn them, because they'll be too too worried about obviously Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden, probably Joe Harris is another one that they'll be aware of. But, you know, it'll be people like Mike James and Nick Claxton and Bruce Brown and Landry Shamet and stuff that's going to be the people that are able to talk teams when they're busy looking at the three-headed monster.
The thing he did that impressed me last night was actually a turnover. It got me sort of like, ooh, because he picked the ball off the... He came off the right hand side of the backcourt. He caught a rebound, went three quarters of the way up the court, and then fizzed a bullet pass into the corner where Joe Harris was just making his way to. And it was just a little bit off timing, but you can just see that if they get some reps together, that was just a really quick transition, really, really, like the pass was perfect for a corner three, and it was just... ooh, it was tantalizing. I'm kind of surprised that Mike James dropped out of the league in the first place, because although his stats were never great, if you watched him playing for Phoenix, even though it was an abysmal Phoenix team, he was actually pretty good. In fact, his best game came against the Nets. He had 24 points, 5 assists, 4 steals, and a block. And you've already mentioned his diminutive stature, and that is to get a block in the NBA is pretty good. So I wonder if like Sean Marks has done the old Doc Rivers trick of someone who played against me played well, I'll take him. But obviously he's proven talent in Europe. He's done phenomenally well at the places he's been at. It's a good pickup. So from your position, you must be expecting them to renew that 10-day contract and eventually sign him to a rest of the season deal, even though probably you're not looking for a ball handler.
We're not looking for a ball handler, but it just goes to show with Harden being out, I think we've had so much. We just need guards. I think especially when it comes to the playoffs, the ball's not going to be out of Kyrie or KD or James Harden's hands ever. So you're right, we don't need a ball handler per se. But I just think someone to push the tempo while these people are getting rest, and just a safe pair of hands and a high IQ player. I think, you know, and especially when it comes to this time in the season, the people that are signable, the pool is pretty shallow. So I think just another masterstroke by executive of the year, Sean Marks, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. This has been by far a smooth sailing season and ascension to dominance in the league. Obviously, the season started with Dinwiddie's partial tear of his ACL. Used to be sort of career ending potentially, and now he's 6 months later and we're talking about him coming back, which is just ridiculous. There's been the upheaval of the Harden trade, KD being in and out with injuries. Obviously LaMarcus Aldridge, just, you know, one moment he arrives, the next minute he's retired from the league. 27 players have been on the Nets roster this season. That's not conducive to championship winning in terms of, they talk about roster turnover being a key component, being able to get on the same page and just build that longevity. What concerns do you have for this Nets team?
I think my main concern obviously is health for this Nets team. And like you say, not being able to have that settled amount of the same people playing basketball a lot together is conducive to winning. I think that's, I'm no head coach, but I think that's a pretty easy statement to make. But the matchups when you get to the conference finals and the NBA finals are going to be the sort of teams we struggle against. Obviously the Aldridge signing went some way to counter our fragility against absolute units like Embiid and AD. Obviously, he's had to retire, as you say. So it's kind of going to be up to DeAndre Jordan, who, given the right matchup, can do as well as anyone else realistically can against those type of players. So where we've got that, we haven't really got that big. That's obviously worries me. And around with Nets fans, that was one of the things that didn't really get addressed in free agency or the very, very lucrative buyout market that we enjoyed. Defense is also a worry. Famously, obviously, going into the season, everyone was kind of saying that we can't defend. I know it's a word that normally gets banned from this podcast, but I think I'm going to chance my arm because I'm a guest. But especially from the wing position, even if you discount the kind of lack of rim protection, if we were to face a team with a lot of talent out on the wings, then we'd probably have to rely on sort of switching a lot. We've got quite a switch heavy system, and we'd probably have to guard them by committee. But then you've also got KD, who I think is an underrated defender, being a very good help defender at the rim. So I think schematically, I think, you know, a tip of the hat needs to go to not only Steve Nash, but I think we've almost got our own super team of coaches out there as well, which I think sometimes people do kind of forget. We've got Steve Nash, we've got Mike D'Antoni, we've got Jacques Vorm, we've also got Ime Udoka, we've got Thiago Splitter out there, we've got Amari Stoudemire. We've got lots and lots of...
Mike D'Antoni,
yeah. We've got a lot of very, very intelligent people and a lot of intelligent players. And I think by committee, I think they kind of... Nothing worries me so much that I think it's going to ultimately be our downfall, I think.
Yeah, I do think that the system, certainly the offensive system that's in place, is overlooked because of the three superstars. You've got role players here who are absolutely performing above what you would want them to perform. I mean, Joe Harris this season has been just disgustingly good. It's just unbelievable how people don't talk about him more. So I guess the way that this team runs, it's great to have three stars. They don't need three stars the way they're running at the minute. When we get to the playoffs, though, everyone talks about how, you know, the pace slows down. Well, we didn't see that last year. Maybe that was because of the bubble. It sort of stayed at the same in terms of points per game, or rather points per 100 possessions. If we don't see that regression this season, then I don't see what the issue is, because they're going to continue scoring at a ridiculous pace. And even if there's some, even if offense slows down a bit, you've got three guys in that team, two of them with championships, who have been to the finals and know what it takes. This doesn't feel the same as, you know, we've just put three superstars together who've never played before. And of course, Harden played in a finals with KD in OKC. This isn't like just three people who have never had their own individual success put together. So I don't buy into the defense will ultimately be their downfall argument. And Nick, I know that you have them coming out the East. What's your thoughts on basically what they've just got a wealth of riches to choose from.
Yeah, I have them winning everything. I think the talent is undeniable. The offense is undeniable. Their defense isn't fantastic, but they can outscore anyone despite defense. So health is the only potential issue. We've had Kevin Durant out a long time, played one game, looks incredible, looks like KD. James Harden had a setback, out for a long period again. Chemistry isn't a concern for me. We've seen these guys really get on. The team plays well together. So, yeah, I hate to say it, but health is the only thing that could undermine that team, I think. I honestly think the talent level on that team is too high for any other team to compete in a 7-game series, assuming health.
Yeah, I've seen articles about how, you know, by Thanksgiving, KD and LeBron already had more time together than the Nets three have. For those who aren't aware, the big three have only played 7 games together, just 186 minutes. Harden and Kyrie have had 26 games together. Kyrie and KD have had 19. Harden and KD have had 9 games together in Brooklyn, not including OKC, obviously. Per CBS, only one post-merger NBA champion has ever had three leading scorers that never played together before the season began. Anyone want to take a guess at that team? It was 2008.
Say it again.
2008. One post-merger NBA champion has ever had three leading scorers that had never played together before the season began.
Lakers, probably?
No, two of them went on to be Nets.
Boston.
Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, and Kevin Garnett played 65 total games together. But the time that I'm more... Like when I think back to teams that haven't been together for that long and looking at it as to, you know, a way to say, look, don't worry that they haven't played together that long, is something like, and I know we're going way back here. I say way back. It's 03-04. The Detroit Pistons only got 22 games with Rasheed Wallace, and he became an absolutely integral part of that team, arguably the best player on that team. Obviously, that was a different era. It wasn't injury related at all. He came in shape. He played for Portland, was traded to Atlanta. Did he play one game or three games? He didn't play long in Atlanta before they shipped him out again. So, yeah, if you bought a Rasheed Wallace Atlanta Hawks jersey, you're either just out of luck completely or you've got an absolute gem there. I think he had a decent game as well, if memory serves. But that, you know, like I said, it's a different era. Like they're no one on that team averaged over 17.6 points. Here you have two guys averaging over 27 points and a third guy averaging 25 points. It's just an absolute abundance of talent. And they seem to be playing the right way.
Yeah, you know, coming into the season, when I looked at the how those guys were going to fit together, the only potential complication I could foresee was if they were they were going to try and force Kyrie Irving to be the lead guard and James Harden to be the off guard, where that when not that Kyrie Irving can't do that, he obviously he can, he's an unbelievable basketball player, but James Harden is just better at that, being the kind of full-time decision maker as a full-time ball handler. I think he's, again, one of the best I've ever seen ever do that. He's unstoppable, whether he's passing or scoring. And Kyrie Irving is actually at his best, I think, when his role is situationally, no one can stop you, and use that way, just as he was in Cleveland playing alongside LeBron. And I feel like that wasn't even an issue. Kyrie Irving just said, James, you're the point guard. And that was that sorted. And that was the only complication I could foresee happening. And it was a non-issue. So,
do you think that was a maturity level that Kyrie's reached, where he's realized that actually, you know, he was better served as the Robin to LeBron in Cleveland? You know, he went and tried to do it on his own, and as fantastic individually as he's been, that's never translated to team success. So maybe it's a level of maturity where he's realized that if he wants to get back up to the Mount Olympus of the NBA, it's going to be by not being the lead guy. And that's a hell of a thing, if that is it, to sort of be able to do. You know, these are guys who have been apex predators their entire careers up until the NBA. Matt, you look like you want to jump in on that.
Yeah, I think it's one of those. I think Kyrie got quite reflective at the beginning of this season, where it was, you know, it's his 10th year. So he's looking back, and there was a lot said about him teaming up with KD, and he went on record saying that he'd never played with someone that he trusted to take the last shot over him, which obviously a lot of people thought was a not so thinly veiled shot at LeBron James. But, you know, I think there is, and I think with the conversation that you're alluding to, where they had Kyrie and Harden had a conversation saying, look, I'm the point guard, you're the shooting guard. I think it was Kyrie who actually sort of said those words between them. So, you know, I think, like you said, I think that's him being the two definitely suits his game a lot more. I think it suits his personality a lot more. He sees basketball as an art form, as we know. So him being able to just go out there and create, I think, just suits him a lot better, and he's playing happier basketball. And I think that ultimately will lead to to more success, which is great. But the one thing I think I wanted to touch on with the Nets being able to gel together is the way that James Harden came in post-trade. Mm-hmm. I mean, not only did he come in and gel with the Nets team, but he kind of became their most important player. And the way he did that was pretty extraordinary to me. And weirdly, I think the way that he's been sitting for the last little while makes me think he's been rested for the playoffs, which I understand he doesn't have a stellar track record in. But when he doesn't have to carry an entire team on his back, I think you'll see the best version of James Harden, which I think is, you know, we're not only getting James Harden for this team, we're getting the best version of James Harden. And I know it's a small sample size, but in the past week while KD's been back, Steve Nash was actually staggering Durant and Kyrie's minutes, which they weren't doing pre this latest injury. So I think come playoff time, you're always going to have at least two of the big three on the floor. And come crunch time, that's when they'll all be out there with, you know, Joe Harris as a tail to the three-headed monster that can also get you, and an other person. And that's just going to be hard to stop.
Yeah, so you mentioned the playoffs there. Obviously, they're in the first seed at the moment. Let's assume things stay the same. Right now, they could play in the first round any of the Heat, Hornets, Pacers, or Wizards. Is there someone in that group you wouldn't want to see?
The Wizards, weirdly, have had our number this season, so I would love to avoid the Wizards. The Hornets, I think, would be good because obviously if they stay injury depleted, I don't know if they've got what the time frame for Gordon Hayward and LaMelo are. But it would be great because obviously they're not full strength. The Pacers, I don't really know. I haven't watched enough Pacers basketball to be really, really annoyed or really, really sort of really concerned with what they can do. But no, I don't. The way I say that the Wizards is the short answer, but I don't think there's anyone in a seven game series that worries me, like no matter how deep you get.
Okay. And there's also a potential second round series there. So I'm just going to just throw this out there and let you two fight over it. What happens if the Battle of New York is in round two? How big of a deal is that for the NBA and, you know, for you guys as fans? Is there going to be sort of a bitterness, some kind of, you know, well, obviously you're going to be flag waving and everything like that, but what would it mean to you to face off in the second round?
It'd be fantastic. I think I've said it all season, right? I'm over the moon that the Knicks are good now, or the Knicks are better than they have been. No, you know, if there's nothing would be better, nothing's better than when all the teams are really good and playing really, really close, hard fought basketball games. In the same breath, I would love to destroy them by 50 points every single time we play them. But I think that's just a case, you know, if you make out that the person you're beating is nothing, then beating them is nothing. But it's, I think the reason why seemingly everyone, and Nick, you'll probably back me up on this, all Knicks fans want to play the Nets in the playoffs, I think. And Nets fans want to play the Knicks in the playoffs. And I think it's because both teams have been the best versions of themselves in recent history. They both think they've got the better chance of beating the other one. So I think it's a really spicy matchup. I really want it to happen. I would absolutely love it. I'm sounding like Kevin Keegan there, but I would absolutely love it if we swept the Knicks out of the playoffs. Nothing would bring me more joy.
Wow. Nick?
So I think the Knicks would go into that series and they can't lose. The Knicks have the second lowest payroll in the NBA. Let's not forget how much this is an overachieving season for the Knicks. The predictions for the Knicks were like not even close to making the playoffs. And yet here they are sitting fourth in the Eastern Conference. So even if the Knicks got swept, and that let's not be silly here, that's not beyond the realms of possibility given the respective rosters. I feel like that would be an incredible season for the Knicks this season anyway, because they're in two different stages of team development. The Nets are championship or bust basically this season and the next few seasons. The Knicks are still building. So I think it would be great for the NBA. It'd be great for both fan bases to have that kind of rivalry. And yeah, I want to see it too, because beating the Nets in the playoffs with this team would be something special for any Knicks fan, just because, and I honestly think the Knicks fans deserve it based on the past 20 odd years of being a meme team. So yeah, if anyone's owed some sweet wins, it's the Knicks.
The Knicks do. I'm not sure the Knicks fans do. But on that note, let's move on from what's been a lot more Nets talk than I thought we were actually going to get to. Kirk, play that segue.
Nothing but Knicks silly nonsense.
Okay, so I'm going to start with one where this is based on a careful surveying of Matt's social media. And Matt, I'd like you to list as many great things about Ben Simmons as you possibly can.
I'm sure he does a lot of nice things in his personal time. I bet he's a great cook.
I don't believe you at all, because I know you've said I'm trying to remember what the exact word you said was, but it was like, even the way he said it, I was just like, I don't like that guy. So you don't think this at all, I don't think. I think, carry on then.
Anyway, for anyone who's not familiar, this came from you saw a tweet or something comparing... No, it was a poll, wasn't it, over whether Ben Simmons or Kyrie was the better... Oh, no, it wasn't even phrased like that. It wasn't better player. It was who would you rather have for the next X number of years.
I don't even think it was that. Wasn't it just literally Kyrie or Ben?
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah. So anyway, and it ended in great hilarity over how upset Matt got about that. Okay, no, the real question, can you list positive things about the Knicks? No, that's a joke as well. Okay, real question. With Slamball having made a viral return to social media this week, and for anyone not familiar with Slamball, thanks, Kirk, for the clip there. It's like a crazy combination of basketball and American football with trampolines. And it's like the most physical sport you could possibly imagine. But anyway, yeah, people were sharing it on Twitter this week. I think it was like maybe late 2000s, early 2010s, maybe, when this was a thing.
Yeah.
But anyway,
late 2000s.
Yeah, my question for you guys is, who would you pick from the world of basketball to make a Slamball team? There's four players you have to have on a team.
From any era.
Any era.
Yeah, if you guys haven't watched Slamball, go and watch it. It was amazing. I used to stay up late and watch it a lot. Fantastic. I think the guy who, the actual real life Coach Carter, ended up coaching in Slamball as well. I'm going to go straight off the bat. If he's a current NBA player, I would love to see Zion Williamson. He's already got hops and he can already just gut check people into the third row.
So I've gone. Unsurprisingly, I thought I'd do an all Nets, all time slam ball team. So I've got four and an honorable mention, if you'll indulge me ever so slightly.
Let's go through your one. Let's go through one at a time.
Okay, great. Perfect. I'm going to go for Julius Erving, absolute Skywalker in his day. So I just want to see what he would cook up if he had a trampoline.
He'd also look crazy with those scrum cap things they wore on, with his bits of his fro coming out.
Just poking out. Or he'd just shave a scrum cap pattern into his existing fro and just catch everyone off guard.
My fear for the Doctor, he may be slightly lightweight for this sport. He may just be obliterated by the nutcases. And I for my first pick, I've also gone for Zion. I think if your team doesn't include Zion, you've gone wrong with this question.
Okay, so we're second picks now. Oh god, we're rotating. And I've got to think of a second person. I'm gonna go 80s Pistons, Rick Mahorn.
Nice. What's his role gonna be on the team? I can probably guess.
Same as it was on the Pistons, get buckets and kill people.
Okay. Sorry, Matt, your second pick.
Great. So the next one, very much for the same similar sort of reasons as I went for the Doctor, I've gone for another Nets legend in Vince Carter. He could jump over 7 foot men without a trampoline. So I want to see him jumping over a 7 foot man, jumping off a trampoline,
I think he could jump over a 12 foot man.
He could, I reckon he'd clear the backboard and just get, I don't know if they play in like a cage or whatever, but he would just keep going.
They had perspex around the outside like it was hockey because it was hockey check-in. So they'd have to put some kind of safety thing up for him. Or like, put, you remember what they called? Scatch pads. Do you remember them?
Yeah.
So maybe like just put the Velcro on the wall and if he goes too high, he could just be caught above the hoop and protected nice and safely. Then they could peel him back off.
With my second pick, I've gone for Liz Cambage from the WNBA. Oh. I think she is not taking any noise from anyone and she would be an absolute unit and an enforcer on my team.
Yeah, can't argue with that. I'm going to go for more nutcases. I'm going Xavier McDaniel. You can have him from the Knicks single season. Didn't he average like 26 points for 1 year for the Sonics? He made an all-star team. I'm taking that version of the X-Men.
I think that might be a mistake. You want the more physical version. You want the Knicks version, in my opinion.
Fine. Okay. I'll take the Knicks version.
For my next guy, sticking with the Nets, I've gone Kenyon Martin.
Yes.
An often forgotten piece of Nets history, but did as much as Jason Kidd and Kerry Kittles to reignite those New Jersey Nets to go from the bottom of the league to the finals. And he's an old-fashioned enforcer, so it would suit the full contact nature of Slamball. Famously got into a fight with his own teammate. He beat up T-Mac as well. So yeah, give me Kmart.
I had to. You had to have him on your list. Just had to.
He is an incredible pick. I'm sad I didn't pick him myself now.
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't. But when he was at Cincinnati, they wrote he was something remarkable about his rebounding was not only did he leap higher than everyone else, but by the time everyone else had leapt and come back down, he'd already leapt again. He's like his speed through the air was just ridiculous. That guy would have been an absolute beast in slam ball. Sorry, back to you.
For my next pick, I have Jerry Stackhouse, a high flyer, but also a guy who basically on every team he ever played on, everyone was scared of him. That's good enough for me.
Why was everyone scared of Jerry Stackhouse?
He was known as someone you did not want to fight. As in, most fights in the NBA, it's like, hold me back, because no one actually really wants to fight. Jerry Stackhouse just punches you in the face. he was known as, look it up, Jerry Stackhouse, real tough guy.
Now, I'm going to swerve on my last pick, because slam ball, you get 3 points for a dunk, but you did also need to be able to shoot. So I'm going to take Larry Bird, because Larry, legendary shooter, obviously.
Legendary bad back. Also, I'm not sure how he's going to do on those trampolines.
I'm taking peak Larry Bird. I'm taking the Larry Bird that had a crumpled hand because he was, what did he do? He caught a softball and mashed up all his fingers before he got drafted. I'm taking the guy whose face hit the Boston Garden floor so hard it left a dent in his face that had to like be pulled back out. And a guy who would get into bar fights and then still drop 50 the next night.
They don't build them like that anymore, do they?
No, they don't.
For my final pick, I've got with an honourable mention to Jarrett Allen, who it still hurts me that he's not on this Nets team. But I'm going to go with Sean Bradley, rounding out the Nets, former Nets, aka the Storm and Mormon. Obviously, sadly, recently became paralysed after getting in an accident. But at 7'6", leads the Nets franchise in block percentage at 9.6. And I just want to see what happens if you put a man that's 7'6" on a trampoline. Just my morbid curiosity just wants to see that happen.
Look, I'm not going to lie. I think that's a fail, that pick. I understand the logic behind it, but I just remember him being posted by so many. I know he got a lot of blocks, but slam... I think in one lockout as well, in protest of the... Oh, God, I'm really going down rabbit holes tonight. In protest of the league being locked out, every slam up in each month's episode, in each month's magazine was a picture of Sean Bradley getting dunked on.
So wouldn't that make you want to watch more slam ball to see people getting dunked on?
True. The fan wants to watch. The guy who wants your team to win, not so much. I'd have picked Derek Coleman. I think that would have been a nasty New Jersey Nets.
My final pick, I went for a guy who, if you think about the greatest athletes ever to play in the NBA, he gets a lot of disrespect currently, but I've gone for Russell Westbrook. He is an absolute undeniable athlete, and I think he'd be absolutely perfect for this game. Combination of physicality, strength, jumping ability, speed. Probably better at slam ball than basketball. Honourable mention was Lou Dort as well. I wanted to work him into there somehow, but couldn't quite get him in.
Lou Dort would be good. There's some great picks. That was a good Nick Silly Nonsense. Let's move on to Talking on D, our discourse on Discord. If you want to come and talk hoops with us 7 days a week, discord.me/doubleclutch. Some of the things that we sort of rattled on about this week, the definition of MVP. There are some people in there that think it's the biggest contributor to the team with the best chance of winning the title. There are others who think it's the the player who provides the biggest value to the team they're on, i.e. where would they be without him. There was some chatter, and there'll be more chatter about the WNBA as we get closer to their season starting next month, about the size of their WNBA training camp rosters, which are close to 30 players and need to be reduced to 12 to 13 players, and yet they still do three rounds of drafts each year, which is just absurd. It's ridiculous. That I feel harsh for, like, and I know that more money is available in Europe, but it seems harsh to have more than half the roster each year just be that sucks. Do better, WNBA, more teams. Although saying that, do better. if you're not, go and subscribe on their WNBA League Pass. It's like £20 for the entire season and playoffs. It's an absolute steal and it's great. Fantasy League update. Nick, you went out this week.
Yeah, I beat Kirk in the previous week and then I forgot to update my players. I was so giddy from that. I didn't update my players this past week and lost. I didn't even look at how close it was, so I don't know if that would have made a difference or not.
You lost 8-3.
So yeah, setting my players probably would have made a significant difference.
I imagine
I beat
you probably
Kirk, so that's the main thing.
Yeah, that is the main thing. I imagine the 3-1 were probably turnovers, technical fouls, and maybe even like field goal percentage if you didn't know a lot of players playing. Raging Bowl, which is Tom's team, beat Flying Tortoise, the Kent Shell Shockers. It's Time to Jingle. That's Scotty Sicko from our Discord. He beat Black Jops. And the biggest surprise was Nottingham Gam, who were 15-0 in the regular season, going out 6-5 to I'd Eat One More, which is just an amazing name as well, by the way. So we have our conference finals now. It's I'd Eat One More versus It's Time to Jingle and Wade County versus Raging Bowl. So next week we'll update you with who's in the final and keep everyone interested.
Rumours that Rich Fang has actually quit basketball. Not in the chat today, I see.
Really? Well... I did have a quick look at the Discord channel and what was firing through there for the Fantasy League. And I did see the comment, he's a Milwaukee Bucks fan, about being a regular season team only, which just made me chuckle a lot. We've got time for a couple of questions. So Hoopin and Lutin, who is currently recovering from an operation. We hope you're doing well, buddy. Although you're in Spain, so you must be doing pretty well because I bet it's nice and warm there. We talked about the MVP race a lot this week. Is the MVP race discussion the most over-the-top reactive discussion in sport? And by this, I mean a two-week streak of performance can elevate everyone to judge a player the best when it's a season-long award. Matt, what do you think?
Short answer is yes. I think it's just the most subjective award in history. And I think the NBA like it that way. I mean, with football, you've got the Golden Boot. You know, the player that scores the most goals in a tournament or whatever gets a prize. There's no debate in it. It celebrates like a tangible achievement. The MVP is just all opinions and narratives. For me personally, the league's most valuable player will be the player that brings the most attention to the league as a whole. So that would be a mix of their on-court ability, success over an entire season. So
that's LeBron James every season, isn't it?
Yeah, LeBron James.
And there's an argument that he should have won more, but I think if that's what the league's most valuable player, that's how I define it. But you know, I get that there's discussion about it, but yeah, it is a bit of a weird one. But you know, that's why we talk about it.
Yeah, Nick, what were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I don't even just think it's the MVP award. I think what this really comes down to is recency bias. And I think you see that in any argument about the NBA now, where a player has 3 bad games in a row, you'll see everyone saying they're terrible when it's Russell Westbrook or I don't know. I try and drown that out as much as I can, because also it's like, it shouldn't be the case, but it definitely is when you look at prior MVP winners. The person who starts the strongest is at a great disadvantage compared to the person who finishes strongest, which in theory shouldn't be the case, but it definitely is.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Also, like, I get the reason it's that way is because it drives narratives and keeps the whole, just the media consumption and just keeping the NBA's attention, well, the fans' attention on the NBA throughout the whole season. Like, one of the earliest things this season, we'll keep it Nets related, it was the whole, you know, he can't be MVP because the way he got out of Houston, even though his stats in Houston, you can say he checked out mentally or whatever, his stats in Houston were still decent. And then he just absolutely tore up the league. Admittedly, you know, the injuries, he's not going to get it. But just to be sort of, I mean, well, the season started mid-December and he'd been traded by, what, the 4th, 5th of January? So we're like 3-4 weeks into the season and it's like, no, you can't get MVP, mate. Narratives like that, they're interesting, but yeah, I completely get what Elliot's
How
saying.
How valuable to really the reactive. Rockets do you think he was this year?
Well, they're bottom of the league now, aren't they? Pretty much.
Were they doing well with him?
I'm trying to remember what they were doing with him. They were sort of 50-50. They're around 500 at the time, I think. And that's why he was getting some slack, because it was like, you're not contributing the way you should be, even though, you know, they've got a new system in there, no preseason. Yeah. He obviously turned up in typical James Harden fashion, a little bit out of shape. So they had a slow start, but he still puts the numbers up.
Yeah, that's just because who he is. As you know, I've been James Harden's biggest fanboy for years now. But I can see both sides to this. When he got to Brooklyn, he was probably the best player in the NBA for an extended period there. But I think it's difficult for, remember, there's going to be Houston media members who also get an MVP vote. And watching the guy very much not playing as well as he can deliberately, I don't think it's unfair to say that. I just don't think you can do that in a season and win MVP that same season, even if it's unfair.
And that's why the MVP will be an eternal debate. Question from Ginger Shack, specifically for Matt. How proud do you feel for your achievements with your Hoops Against Hunger initiative in 2020?
That was really cool. So that was a time when the UK government decided that they didn't want to extend free school meals to needy children over the summer holidays. And you probably saw it with Marcus Rashford, the Man United player, using his platform to kind of point awareness to it. And, you know, it wasn't me. My only talent is that I can make a tweet look half good and circulate it around. But the whole community that, you know, you guys all clubbed together and donated some money, the guys at NBA UK fans did, pretty much everyone I interact with on Twitter did, and we ended up raising £1,000, over £1,000 for local food banks, which is incredible. But yeah, it wasn't I feel a sense of pride to be in this community rather than any personal pride for the money raised. But yeah, it was really, really cool to see.
It was a really great I don't know what the word to describe it, but basically the idea, the concept was to donate the amount of pounds that reflected the jersey number of your favorite player and go from there. And it was smart. Fair play. It was a great idea. Games of the week. So we have definitely run along. Matt, what's your game of the week?
Well, as Nick stole mine, I've gone for Suns versus Clippers. Obviously the Suns are great at the moment, and the Clippers are on a roll, so it'd be good to see. It seems like it feels ever so more likely that the locked on nature of the Lakers coming out the West is somewhat up in the air. So I think both those teams are going to be looking to want to win that one. So I think that's going to be a good contest.
Yeah, I agree. Nick?
So I'm going to cheat, actually, and have two. I have mostly not to give Matt the satisfaction of saying this game. Nets at the Bucks Sunday, 8:30 p.m. What more could you ask for? Early tip. The two best teams in the East, probably. But the real answer is obviously Knicks playing the Suns tonight as time of recording. Trying to make it 10 straight. That's the real answer.
See, now, what would have been the amazing flex is if you'd then just not mentioned the Nets game at all.
I did think about it. I honestly did think about it.
I've gone for the top of the Western Conference, Friday, 3 a.m., Jazz at the Suns. So a lot of Suns games this week, which you wouldn't have said that this time last year. Partly because there were no games going on at this time last year. But no, until they got to the bubble, you wouldn't have said this. So we'll end it there. But thanks to everyone for dropping in tonight. Thank you for all the follows. We've had new people in Discord. We've had new people on Twitch tonight. Shout out to... Oh, where's my screen just gone? That's professional, isn't it? AidenM1995, thanks for the follow. Don't forget, anyone who is following us, you can subscribe for free if you have Amazon Prime to the channel. Check out doubleclutch.uk. There's always new stuff going up on there. Follow us at Double Clutch UK, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok. this list is getting far too long. Matt, where can people find you?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on, first and foremost. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at UK Nets Fans. We've got a Twitter account just for the podcast, which is BK2UK Pod. You can find that on everywhere that does podcasts. And we're also on Twitch and YouTube as well, if you just search for UK Nets Fans.
Perfect. Well, thank you for coming on. It's been a pleasure. We've managed to deep dive Nets. We had to tell Tom he couldn't come on because it would have just been an hour of slander. But it's been a good one. We will see you guys next week. Thank you very much for listening. Take care.
Pop, your impressions of the first quarter?
We're behind and they're ahead.
Why is that?
They scored more than we did, and we were pretty crappy on defense. It's been fun.